Welcome to Turn the Page, the official podcast of the Syosset Public Library.
Hello, my name is Jessica Chotin, and I am sitting here with...
I'm Matt Clapper.
I am Matt Cox.
Clive Young.
Elisa Stern.
And we are going to... Turn the page! Yeah. So I'm absolutely thrilled to have you guys all here. We are going to talk a little bit about fan fiction, which... For years, was something that people did in the privacy of their own homes and didn't talk to people about, myself included. But I'm super happy that that's not how it is anymore. Fan fiction, how would you guys describe fan fiction for our listeners?
I would say like taking a universe that already exists and kind of expanding on it with your own original content and characters and stories and whatnot.
Yeah, I'd say that about sums it up. It's putting your own spin on, you know, something that you really, really like and that generally a lot of other people really, really like.
Yeah. Agreed.
There's a couple of academic schools of thought that it represents, you know, you find a genre or a franchise that you really like, but you find that it's something lacking in it. It doesn't reflect me in such a way. And so people go and fill that gap by inventing their own version.
So let's start with all of you and your experts, your expertise in the field. Would you like to tell me?
Sure. So, I mean, I've been writing fan fiction for years and years now, which has really helped me in my aspirations to become a novelist, a writer, and has spawned some content from me that doesn't even exist now, but... again, it's a world that I'm building. But as far as fan fiction goes, I think actually one of my favorite things to do with fan fiction is actually play by post role playing. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that at all. But essentially, it's a forum where you create a character and you're interacting with other authors of fan fiction, and you can actually feed off each other's characters and things like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah, super fun, but kind of nerdy. But I mean,
no, that's great. I'd known about that, I would have been on that.
Yeah,
years ago.
Very cool. It's very cool.
Yourself, Matt?
Oh, yes. I mean, similar to that, I guess the first thing I ever did that would be considered fan fiction was a similar thing for the video game Kingdom Hearts.
There you go.
Kingdom Hearts!
A certain kind of nerd.
Kingdom Hearts is fan fiction in itself,
And so it was multiple layers, I guess.
Yeah.
But then eventually, in that turn, I eventually started doing like sketch writing and things like that, which is kind of another form of fan fiction, especially when I was playing with genres. And now I'm a playwright, and I wrote a play called Puffs, or Seven Increasingly. Years of school magic, yay! And that is a very kind of different form of fan fiction in its own way.
would you like to tell me to the way that you, I guess, the wording you can use, tell me what Puffs is?
Yes, so Puffs is a play that's currently running in New York City and in Melbourne, Australia.
Nice.
That is a story of a certain boy wizard, a very certain famous boy wizard's 7 years at a certain famous magic school where he got up to all kinds of hijinks. But it's not his story. It's the story of what we call the Puffs, another group of students at the school who are, you know, just trying to live their lives for 7 years.
And you're sitting next to somebody who's wearing a shirt for, what is it, the Smarts?
We call them the Smarts.
The Smarts.
Yes.
There's the Puffs, the Snakes, the Smarts, and...
The Braves.
The Braves, right, okay.
I wonder who's who.
Exactly, who knows?
Clive.
I wrote a book about 10 years ago called Homemade Hollywood, which is a history of fan films, and I traced them back to the 1920s when you had con men running around the Deep South making Little Rascals fan films and stuff. And I sort of traced them up to today, or at least until 2008-ish. There's a more recent version that came out in 2016, but it's in Portuguese. It got printed in Brazil. So it has a new chapter that even I can't read. But in any case, one of the interesting things about it, though, is when I wrote the book, it was a really... there was fan fiction and there was fan films, and nary the twain shall ever meet. And you didn't see these things, them really being brought out from the page to a different, now you have plays where people are, and also one of the other problems I found was that there weren't any, it probably still is, a very middle-class white male person making fan films, and there was nobody else. I searched everywhere and could not. I found one female fan filmmaker. I found one minority person, and he didn't finish his film, so I couldn't even put him in the book because I, you know, the one requirement was people need to be able to find this movie. So it is great to see that these things are sort of changing.
Yeah, absolutely. And Elisa.
Yeah, so I make fan films.
Hey. Exactly, that's what I
mean. Very specific kind of film because I make stop motion animation of Doctor Who.
Nice.
Which it came about in an extremely convoluted way. I didn't really set out to make a fan film series. It just kind of grew organically because I love Doctor Who and animation, and it started out as fan art, and then I'm a storyteller, and I ended up telling a story, and then, oops, me and my team have made close to an entire episode of Doctor Who that's animated, so we have, like, over a half an hour, more than that now, of animated content we've made over the last 6 years. Well over half an hour of content. Gosh, I don't know. I don't look at it all together, but we've made over a dozen films that are stop motion, and Doctor Who isn't stop motion animated. It's not animated, it's with humans, but I kind of wanted to bring a few of things I like together, and Doctor Who somehow became the perfect storytelling vehicle that I could really play in that world. That, like we were saying, it's like when you take a universe that you really love and you want to add to it, and Doctor Who is like the perfect thing to make fan stories for and fan films, because it's literally the whole universe and all of time and space. So, you know,
Doctor Who is an expansive universe, and
it's bigger on the inside.
Yeah. It is. It's totally bigger on the inside. That's why we love it. So, how has working in your fan fiction, you know, and going, you know, either aspiring to go pro, studying pros, or going pro, how has it helped you forward your careers? How have you seen the world change as time goes on? I mean, again, from 90s when you went on the internet, and I guess were fan fiction. there were zines at one point, which fan fiction began, you know, to circulate, but the internet happened, and now you have websites devoted to it. Would you guys like to talk a little bit about any of that stuff?
In the sense of how it shapes what we're doing currently?
Exactly. How, yeah, because it has, I mean, it's been, I guess, you know, 20-some-odd years seems like a long time, but, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I didn't even know fan fiction existed until suddenly it started popping up all over the internet. So to me, things progressed really quickly. And you guys are all doing things with it. So please talk to me about it.
Well, to go back to what I was talking about earlier with the play-by-post forum-based, essentially fan fiction, but it's role-playing, I think it's great that you have these like-minded people that you can kind of feed off of, that they have shared interests and you wind up developing relationships with the other players, I guess you can call them, other writers, that you can actually ask and develop relationships with and ask for notes on whatever works you're currently working on. For me, fan fiction was really a way to again, help shape what is now becoming my own world and my own work. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I think it's extremely influential. All you know, YA stuff and all these famous things really are what influences me and to create my own world that's similar like that.
Speaking, because it is something that especially blew up whenever, you know, the internet became a thing that everyone used. And the way that that's kind of helped, because I work in theater, which is already kind of an inclusive community as
it
is.
You're part of the Story Pirates,
yes,
right?
Yes, I am part of the Story Pirates.
And one of your cohorts, one of your shipmates, actually grew up here in Syosset.
Oh.
Yeah.
Who, may I ask?
Oh, man. Was it?
If it's you, let us know.
Catherine, maybe?
Great. Yeah, there's Catherine.
There's a Catherine. Yeah, yeah. You know what? And I want to get her down here to talk about that, too.
Catherine Montesi, by any chance?
I believe so. Yes, there we go. Yeah. Okay, Catherine. And now I'm going to check my notes, and it's not going to be her. But now I'm going to go fact check myself. But continue, please.
So we were the group of people who were, we were sort of, you know, making plays and things together with, we had been doing like a 4.5 hour long, like, genre play that was this big, like, it's like an anime Saturday morning cartoon mashup thing that's called Kapowie Go-Go that was a lot of fun. But one of the challenges with it was, even though it was very specifically geared towards an audience who liked that kind of thing, it's still very difficult to get people to come and, you know, sit in a theater. So one way that, similar to how, like, the internet's made it so that anyone who likes the thing can all see that there's millions of other people who like this thing, it became clear that, you know, in order to showcase like what we do and what we make, it was like, oh, why don't we do something that, you know, borrows a little bit from another universe and plays with a little bit. And so we were able to, you know, get a lot of people to come and see us because, like, the concept.
Okay,
is,
so actually, yeah. It's Catherine Woodard. Oh,
I know her as well. She's also great.
Apologies to Catherine Montesi, though. I'm sure she's great. Catherine, and Catherine, we will have you here. Turn the page. Continue, Matt.
Yeah, but so we were able to, you know, we started doing the show, and the concept is Lisbeth. It's like, oh, it's, you know, the story at this magic school from the perspective of the Puffs. It's like, oh, people caught onto that. And then since then, because we were able to expose the kind of work we're doing to that audience, we've been able to get that same group of people, you know, to come see other things that we've made, which is really kind of amazing that this, like, fan culture has been able to go from being a fan of one thing to being a fan of what we do as well, which is, I think, was our initial goal anyway. Because we even have, like, people come, like, cosplay our characters from our version of it, which is now, that's the most special part of it.
I saw it with my husband, and, like, immediately you had your goth kind of character, Megan.
Jones, yeah.
Yeah, he was like, I know my favorite character, and I'm like, you are so transparent. Every time we watch anything, I'm like, yeah, that's going to be your favorite character, because he likes to pretend that he's grumbly and edgy, but he's really not, and he knows it. He'll listen to this, and he'll, like, be, we call him Darth Fluffy Cat sometimes. Because he pretends he'd be a Sith, but really he's like, no, he's, you know.
Yeah, he's a porg.
He's not a porg, but he's definitely more on the light side than the dark side.
Oh, that's fun.
teasing my spouse where porks? he can't defend himself. Love you.
Let me think. Technology with the internet certainly provided a big platform for this. I mean, one of the things that I was way back when I wrote the book with that, I was like, well, is this a recent sort of thing, since, you know, creating fan films and that kind of thing since the rise of video cameras? And I, you know, had to go back and discover, no, I found this, interviewed this guy who was 87, I think, at the time, who had made Tarzan movies in the 1930s up in Connecticut and that kind of thing. And I discovered Hugh Hefner made fan films when he was 16, which
what?
Is, yeah, you know, if you told me that Hugh Hefner was making movies with high school co-eds in his basement when he was 16,
actually,
it would be a different kind of film, you know?
No, that actually, okay, when you say it, when you say it like that, it sounds...
Yeah. I know, okay. But he made Dracula movies in his basement.
Okay.
Yeah,
that still sounds like... I get it. Yeah, it's huge. Okay. No, I still get it. But continue. Of course, he did.
Andy
of course,
Warhol made them as well. And actually, Andy Warhol's were far more racy. I mean, he made one about Tarzan. He made one that's missing, that nobody has ever he made one called Batman Dracula in 1964, and apparently went on for about 2 hours. And there's nobody has really the straight story on it. There's some people who say that it only ever got shown in the background during one of his gallery things, a gallery exhibit. Some people say it got shown once and then trashed. There is a little bit of footage that appeared in a TV special a couple of years ago. But nobody's seen it. I mean, it would have been interesting to compare it to the Batman TV show, which came out 2 years later, because the Batman TV show is really influenced by pop art. And here you have the king of pop art.
That's
himself.
A good point.
But then again, apparently his featured a lot of people running around in tinfoil jock straps, which you didn't see very much of on the Adam West one, which is just as well.
Yeah.
But anyway.
None of that made it to camera, thank goodness.
But to try and get myself back onto point.
Yeah.
These were all pretty far and few and in between, and nobody really knew about each other. People were doing this in pockets, but the only platform that you had to share your work with people was, say, a science fiction convention. And back then, those are pretty few and far between as well. Once you get the internet showing up, 95, 96, 97, all of a sudden, you know, there's still a huge wall that people had to get over of creating their own website and, you know, trying to figure out how to put video on the web. But once you get YouTube going in 2005, suddenly it just blows up. And everybody has that access. And now you don't need to spend $500, $600 on a video camera. You have one in your pocket. You know, you have your editing equipment on your in your pocket. You have special effects. You can buy them in an app for $2 in your pocket. So the wall of, you know, oh, I would love to do it, but I can't. You don't have any excuses anymore. You can do
it. You have, there's actually a really great, I guess when Vine was a thing, Zach King, I think his name is, he makes...
Did all the, like, the magic stuff. Yeah.
And
right?
He did this whole thing, Jedi Kittens, which...
Yes, I've seen that. It's amazing. Such amazing effects.
And it's super cute.
Yeah.
So, Elisa, how about yourself?
The internet is... thank the internet for everything. Like I said before, like, I didn't really set out to make a fan film. I started just making fan art and kind of wanting to tell stories. But, you know, it's still a huge effort to make a film, you know, to write a script and then, you know, for my case, animate it. But if you're doing actors, to act it.
I mean, stop motion animation, it's beautiful. It's and I see you're wearing a Leica.
Leica is
a good stop motion animation company. Made Paranorman and Kubo, and I mean, yeah, it's great, but it's very it's tedious. Would you say
That would be a good word for it? We do 12 frames a second, so you have to repose and photograph the puppet 12 times for 1 second of animation.
And you have 6 hours?
Not 6 hours. I don't actually know if we put them all together. I don't even know at this point how much. It's got to be somewhere between maybe 45 minutes.
It's
so
impressive.
At this point, it's over half an hour. You know, there's credits on the video, so I'm not going to count the credits. But it's still a lot. I mean, it's ridiculous for me, having said that I didn't start to make this, but it's because of the internet. Because I started with the fan art, and it was just one puppet, and I would take photos of the puppet and I put it on Tumblr, because this was 2012, so Tumblr was the height of that, and it's still really big for fandom and fanfic, but I think it's in 2012 it was like the place for that.
Yeah.
So I went to Tumblr and started sharing my pictures of my puppets, and then it was popular, and that, you know, that I never had fan art that like people responded to, and it was really addictive.
And I can tell you right now, when I think there were maybe 2 or 3 episodes in, my husband, it was a snowy morning in my old apartment, and he comes in and he's just like, "You need to see this. Aww. Oh my God, this is so cool." And we were hooked.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, and that's why we kept making it, and why, like, I made the stupid decision to write the story that was, you know, at the time I was like, oh, I can finish the story in a year, and that was 5 years ago. But we're actually almost done now, so, you know, we've had to do it, and it's multi-part story with episodes. So, you know, having the internet really latch on and giving great feedback, and then it wasn't just Doctor Who fans. Like, you know, I had really great feedback from the BBC and from people who worked on the show, and I don't know what
did they show. Did they show it on the BBC?
Yeah, I've had clips and stuff showed. Like they did a documentary about the Doctor Who World Tour, which is a thing they did for the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who in 2013, and they interviewed me for it. They did a segment about like fan creators, and then they said, "Hey, if we recorded the actors doing some dialogue, would you animate?" And I said, "Okay," which we ended up getting 20 seconds of dialogue, which is a lot of dialogue. So me and my friend Aaron, who works on Dr. Pivot with me, because it's not just me, it's a team effort, of course. And so we animated that in like a day so that they could put it in their documentary. So we did actually like get the actual actors' voices, Peter Capaldi and Jenna Coleman. But that's how, like, having that community on the internet and having the different platforms, originally Tumblr and then moving to YouTube, and now I'm really into Instagram and Twitter and
all of that.
You know, it's everywhere, and every platform has a slightly different thing. Like, I kind of use Twitter as like a slightly more professional one where I can interact with the actual people who work on Doctor Who, and then, you know, YouTube is for putting my fan videos on, and, you know, that community has been great. I mean, that's, you know, and I'm someone who... was a professional and then dipped into fan films and then to help my professional career, and it has. So
you worked on Team Umizoomi.
Yes,
my twins love you.
Yes,
they
did.
Love you. They sing the songs from Team Umizoomi all the time.
Can't even. I can, but I'm not going to do it. I still have the songs from Wonder Pets in my head.
That's another one.
That's the one I worked on before Amusing Me. Those are some catchy songs.
I can hear those right now.
Imagine working on it every day. It's a great show. Both those shows are great. Yeah, that was my background, was preschool television.
That's really amazing that the BBC was like let you...
They've been really nice.
Yeah, that's really cool.
BBC's really cool. I think that they realized how useful fan fiction and fan creation are. As long as it's not doing anything bad to that brand, it's only helping them.
Yeah.
And Doctor Who fans are crazy about like finding creative ways
to use their
IP.
That's why it's existed for so long.
How have you found the canon creators' response to Puffs? Have you heard from a certain writer who wrote about a certain boy?
We did a lot of work up front to make sure that we didn't break any rules that would upset them.
Because
they're pretty, they're pretty, they want to keep a tight control over, you know, everything like this. So we made sure to make sure that we're, like, you know, in a completely unofficial thing. A parody, even though we technically don't like to call it that because we like to call
it
a play.
It's really heartfelt. If you have not seen it, you have to, because it made us cry.
Yay! Yeah, come, you'll cry.
You'll laugh. But no, mostly you'll laugh. But it's really got a few moments where your heart is kind of being squeezed.
Yeah, which is what was our hope with it. But yeah, we've managed to mostly, you know, we've had some few interactions, but for the most part, it's been... We'd rather stay under the radar, but I think that would be, I mean, if we were able to get something like that, oh boy, that'd be incredible.
I was reading you guys were only supposed to do like 5 performances.
Yeah, Puffs was supposed to just run for 5 shows at this little, at the Pit, the People's Improv Theater, a little comedy theater in New York. And then we kind of hoped to extend, you know, maybe once or twice, but then it kind of caught on. And now we just had a 500th off-Broadway show. Two weeks ago. Yeah. No, it's very exciting. We filmed it, and it was in movie theaters and things like that. So, and hopefully we're going to release that film version sooner to a wider audience, but we'll find out more about that soon.
So before we end, as a librarian, I have been really, again, floored by how much fan fiction has kind of taken over, you know, our consciousness, especially with YA. There's a bunch of YA books like Fangirl and Ship It, which are written about fan fiction writers, and a bunch of books that actually began as fan fiction. And obviously, the names and faces have been changed to protect the innocent, or, you know, the bank accounts of the people who wrote it. Does everybody have a favorite fandom? Do you have an obscure fandom that you like?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm wearing a Ravenclaw shirt.
So you're a Harry Potter all the way.
Huge Potterhead.
Yeah.
Huge Potterhead.
I'd say the biggest, the one that I, but it's not obscure, is I'm a very big Star Wars fan. Like very, very obsessed with Star Wars. I don't know if I have any obscure ones at the moment.
I'm going to come right out and say it, and I know Clive, because I've admitted this to you several times at library events. I found Dark Shadows on Sci-Fi when I was sick one summer in high school, and I was like, and no offense to anybody who loves Dark Shadows, I love it. But I was just like, why are they showing old clips of SNL on the Sci-Fi channel? Because it was so campy and the production value, because it was filmed live. But I became so hooked on it that I made my husband visit the castle where one of the movies was shot up in Sleepy Hollow. And we went on a tour of a graveyard where they have a picture of Jonathan Frid, who played Barnabas Collins in one of the mausoleums. So that's my obscure fandom, and no shame. I love it. But I also love Sailor Moon, and I love Star Wars and Harry Potter.
For an obscure one, actually, I don't know if anybody's familiar with the Venture Brothers at all.
I love the Venture Brothers.
I consider that to be one of the best 5 shows on television.
And there's a lot of fan fiction aspects of Venture Brothers.
Oh, for sure. Oh,
yeah. Are we all familiar with Venture Brothers?
Yeah.
Go Team Venture?
Yeah. Characters like Johnny Quest appear, and they merge everything from that to, you know, the Dracula-based characters things.
I don't think there's any media that isn't influenced heavily, that everything is a little fanficky. I mean, and some things are just like... Doctor Who right now is straight up fan fiction, but it's just official because any show that's been on that long is just at some point the the original creators are replaced by fans.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, yeah.
Everyone is influenced by each other, but now it's like we're aware of it.
And you have like Patton Oswalt writing like Buffy comics, and you know, I mean, really,
Brian Posehn working on Deadpool.
Yeah.
You know?
That's super cool.
Yeah. It really is. There's actually another librarian who works here who once told me that she'd heard somewhere that mythology is considered the first fan fiction, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
Self-insertion usually, but like, you know.
Ryan Johnson, the guy who did Last Jedi, he started out making Ghostbusters fan films in his driveway, nearly set his house on fire when he tried to do the treadmills and the treadmarks, rather, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of, you know, people who've made that jump. And, yeah, I mean, you'd say, would you say modern Star Wars is sort of fanfic?
Yeah, it's definitely. This is exactly what you said. All the people who are now making it were the people who grew up loving it. And so they're
Star Trek, Star Wars, Doctor Who.
They're all mythology.
It's
just licensed fanfiction.
Yes, exactly. That is my feeling. And even, you know, the expanded universe, which has now been regulated as Legends in the Star Wars universe, you know, Timothy Zahn, that's fan fiction.
Yeah.
When you think about it, it was canonized and then it was taken out of canon. But some of it remained, like, what's his name? Is it
Thrawn?
Thrawn, yes.
Thrawn's back?
Thrawn's back, and he's awesome. Yes.
I think going back to the licensed fan fiction thing, I mean, you have you have so many people now who write fan fiction, and, you know, now you have stories like Star Wars, Rogue One, a Star Wars story, and now you have the Wizarding World that's coming up, and that's pretty much allowing so much more in this universe to become, like you said, licensed fan fiction, you know? And I think that's a really amazing thing, and you can see how it influences these major franchises.
Yeah, that's actually, I guess, within all of these things, the Wizard franchise that I dare not say its name. that's one of the only ones that's still very much not that, because it's still very much kept under the original creator, which that's interesting.
Well, I want to thank everybody so much for being here with me. Everybody has also come to do a workshop with some librarians to talk to us about the importance of fan fiction and how librarians should be aware of it, because it is our world. You know, as things continue to arise, this is where we're at.
It's a great place to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're building stories. That's what fan fiction is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And yes. So thank you very much. Once again, my name is Jessica Chertan, and I am sitting here with
Matt Clapper,
Matt Cox,
Clive Young,
and Elisa Stern.
And I am going to close this chapter of
Turn the Page.
It's time to close this chapter of Turn the Page. Join us for the next episode. We'll be right back.